It is a desperately difficult thing to carry on another man's story, and must be a more or less mechanical effort. I had one experience of it when my neighbour at Hindhead, Grant Allen, was on his deathbed. He was much worried because there were two numbers of his serial, Hilda Wade, which was running in the Strand magazine, still uncompleted. It was a pleasure for me to do them for him, and so relieve his mind. But it was difficult collar work, and I expect they were pretty bad. Sometime afterwards, a stranger, who evidently confused Alan and me, wrote to say that his wife had given him a baby girl, and that in honour of me, he was calling her Hilda Wade. He was really nearer the truth than appeared at first sight. I well remember that deathbed of Grant Allen's. He was an agnostic of a type which came very near atheism, though in his private life an amiable and benevolent man. Believing what he did, the approach of death must have offered rather a bleak prospect, and as he had paroxysms of extreme pain, the poor fellow seemed very miserable. I had often argued the case with him, I from a theistic and he from a negative point of view, but I did not intrude my opinions or disturb his mind at that solemn moment. Deathbed changes, though some clergy may rejoice in them, are really vain things. His brain, however, was as clear as ever, and his mind was occupied with all manner of strange knowledge, which he imparted in the intervals of his pain, in the curious high nasal voice which was characteristic. I can see him now, his knees drawn up to ease internal pain, and his long thin nose and reddish-grey goatee protruding over the sheet, while he croaked out, "Byzantine art, my dear Doyle, was of three periods, the middle one roughly coinciding with the actual fall of the Roman Empire, the characteristics of the first period," and so on, until he would give a cry, clasp his hands across his stomach, and wait till the pain passed before resuming his lecture. His dear little wife nursed him devotedly and mitigated the gloom of those moments, which can be made the very happiest in life if one understands what lies before one. One thinks, as a contrast, of Dr. Hodgson's impatient cry, "I can hardly wait for death." Grant Allen's strong opinions in print, and a certain pleasure he took in defending outside positions, gave quite a false view of his character, which was gentle and benignant. I remember his coming to a fancy dress ball which we gave in the character of a cardinal, and in that guise all the quiet dignity of the man seemed to come out, and you realised how much our commonplace modern dress disguises the real man. He used to tell with great amusement how a couple, who afterwards became close friends, came first to call, and how as they waited on the doorstep the wife said to the husband, "Remember, John, if he openly blasphemes, I leave the room." He had, I remember, very human relations with the maids, who took a keen interest in their employer's scientific experiments. On one occasion these were connected with spiders, and the maid rushed into the drawing-room and cried, "Oh, sir, Araminta has got a wasp!" Araminta was the name given to the big spider which he was observing at the time. Grant Allen had no actual call to write fiction, but his brain was agile enough to make some sort of job of anything to which it turned. On the other hand, as a popular scientist, he stood alone, or shared the honour with Samuel Lang. His only real success in fiction was the excellent short story John Creedy, where he combined science with fiction, with remarkable results.